From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block. U.S. Marines are in Sri Lanka, helping clear the rubble from the tsunami catastrophe. Repairing the damage is going to be an enormously long and costly task, but homes and roads and businesses are not the only things that need repair. NPR's Philip Reeves reports that the tsunami also left massive psychological damage in Sri Lanka.
A 50-meter stretch along Sri Lanka's coast tells you all you need to know about the scale of the tsunami's casualties. This is a place called Maligai Kadu Beach Road. Mohammed Sharif's tea shop was in number 207. He lost his 9-year-old granddaughter and his mother-in-law, but he got off lightly compared to his neighbors. Four people were killed next door, he says. And in the house next to that, there were another five deaths. And just across the road, he continues, 42 children drowned when the tsunami swept through their Islamic school. This is Kalmanai, about halfway down Sri Lanka's east coast. The entire town's in mourning. The number of dead and missing here and in the surrounding district runs into five figures. Down an alley off the main street, Sabalpati Kamalanathan briefs his handful of staff. He's an official with a tiny non-governmental organization called Survivors Associated. It was created a few years ago to provide counseling for those suffering from the trauma of Sri Lanka's civil war. Though badly underfunded and undermanned, it's now switched to helping the multitude of people suffering from psychological problems because of the catastrophe. Few others are doing this kind of work, says Kamalanathan. He says one objective is to try to rid people of their fear.
A lot of people are refusing to go back to living near the sea or have any contact with the sea. To deal with this, we are educating them on the facts of the cause of tsunami and advising them or teaching them on the fact that the probability of another tsunami is a long way off.
The weakest and most vulnerable are amongst those who are suffering the most.
Many children are affected. They have begun to wet their beds. They have nightmares, and when they see water, they panic and start to run. Sleeplessness, etc., amongst the children.
Kamalanathan is himself traumatized. His niece was killed by the tsunami. He now has a house full of displaced people. He's received counseling from a colleague to help him get over the after effects.
For the first 3 days, I had horrible nightmares reliving that scenario. But I feel a little bit better now.
Down beside the beach, a few hundred meters away, beyond the endless piles of rubble that used to be people's homes, past the smashed-up fishing boats and the shattered shrines and polluted water wells, Mohammed Hussein has his head buried in his arms. He's leaning against the wall of his local mosque, which, though damaged, survived the tsunami. He appears in despair. He's lived on the beach all his life, he says, helping fishermen haul in their boats. Most of the boats and many of his friends have been lost. Apparently bewildered and overwhelmed by grief, Mohammed comes daily to the mosque to lean on the wall, searching for relief for his misery.
I'm so used to coming here. My whole life has been on this beach and this area, so I'm so used to it that I just come here and stay at this mosque.
Such open emotion is rare. Not far away, Veti Veli is standing in the empty space that was once his house. He's come to dig in the sand in search of his possessions. He's a policeman and was away when the waters rushed in, but his wife and 3-month-old baby died here.
It's very difficult for me to get sleep. I just spend the night thinking about all that's happened.
Yet when he talks about what happened, it seems to be with a detached and fatalistic air. Stoicism seems common among Sri Lanka's tsunami victims, at least in their outward behaviour. Patrick Harrigan from Detroit has lived in Sri Lanka many years.
In this society where there's very little privacy, people are accustomed to keeping things to themselves. So I think that's part of what we're seeing here. People are not openly displaying their feelings, but when you speak to them face to face, their feelings come forth. But I don't think we ever get the full force of what they have been through.
At a time when people might be expected to turn to their faith, many of their churches, mosques and temples have been destroyed. The tsunami waters did not penetrate this mosque, though, where men gather for evening prayers. But it's disrupted the lives of everyone inside. Ayam Mohadin is the mosque's most senior official.
Oh, my relations are about 25 people have gone. 25 in my family. Even today, one dead gone. One who was admitted to the hospital, he has died there. That's all.
He too has an apparent air of fatalism, though his appears rooted in his faith. It's not his place, he argues, to question why catastrophes happen.
That, of course, I can't say. God is there. That is his decision. So that is his will and pleasure. He can punish the people. He can keep the people in happiness. That is left to him. No. Everything depends on God.
Not everyone's happy with the answers religion has to offer. Saras Woody lost her father. She had to let go of him when the waters overpowered her. She also lost her sister and her niece. She too seems to conceal her grief as she describes these losses, but she makes no attempt to disguise her anger.
Why didn't we receive warning? We had 2 hours after the Indonesian quake, and at least a 5 minutes warning would have helped. 5 minutes would have saved my father's life.
Philip Reeves, NPR News, Colombo.